You're listening to the Kumek Podcast, hosted by our teacher development team. Enjoy!
So we're going to move on now, and it's with great pleasure that I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Romaine Gadelrab, who I actually went to medical school with many moons ago. And she's now a consultant psychiatrist and clinical research fellow at the Institute of Psychology, Psychiatry and Neuroscience at King's, and co-chair of the Royal College of Psychiatrists Digital Special Interest Group. So today she's going to be speaking on digital hyperconnectivity, something that affects us all, and technology and our mental health.
So thanks so much for having me, Layla. So lovely in, you know, introduced me so nicely. I'm super interested in everything to do with technology and mental health, the good, the bad, the evil. I also work as an honorary doctor at the National Center for Internet Gaming Disorder, which is a pretty new diagnosis, and I'm learning a lot from being in that clinic. So indeed, today I want to talk to you about digital hyperconnectivity and what that might mean as it's affecting us right now on this Zoom call. So please do stick with me. Please focus on the screen. Please don't pick up your phone or any other kind of technologies while we're on this call. But when I'm talking about hyperconnectivity, a definition I quite like, but that's quite convoluted, is by this researcher called Rogers Brubaker. And he's saying it's essentially the condition in which everyone is potentially connected to everybody else, to an exponentially growing array of sensor-embedded things, and to an infinity of digital content everywhere and all the time. And I kind of think about this because even if you try to get out to nature in a forest, you still probably might have a smart watch or a phone where you can Google almost any fact or reach almost anybody now that everybody's sort of hyper-available on Twitter or social media, or even your family on WhatsApp. So I was trying to think a little bit more around today's theme of identity shifts and thinking about the pandemic. And I think this idea of hyperconnectivity and this shift to always being online has made a huge kind of change, not only to our daily lives, but in many ways, actually to our identities, because we're no longer going online because we're always connected in some way. And even if we're asleep, people can interact with almost a second version of ourselves in the form of online personas we might have, or even if that's someone sending an email to our kind of doctor's email address. In terms of new identities, we're almost being constructed a little bit from the outside because we're kind of becoming service to all these sorts of kind of techno-social systems that we're now part of. Like I was saying, for even those of us who might not engage in social media, today, this call is an example. We're having to present digital versions of ourselves to our patients, to our students. We have to show that we're competent with Zoom calls and Teams, and we have these like curated virtual backgrounds to show who these digital versions of ourselves are. So I know we don't really have much time to interact, but I was wondering if you could think about anything you've done in these last couple of years as you've moved your life in many ways online that you might have thought you wouldn't have done. So these are things I was just thinking of last night. So I formed working relationships with colleagues who I speak to every week, and I feel like I know them really well, but I've never actually met them. I'm part of things like an online book club. Patients email me directly, which was something I was kind of against and didn't think I'd ever do, but it's part of my very much my working life at the moment. I've replied to emails from my bed that maybe nobody realizes. I've attended my own therapy on Zoom. I took a meeting the other day on the bus, and I've created this professional Instagram persona, which is gross because I hate social media. And sometimes it's a necessary evil. So as I was saying, don't need to tell you all about the technological shift that we are part of. This is just the number of daily active users on MS Teams since 2019. So you can see how that's exponentially risen. And there's lots of kind of proposals as to why we might be feeling more exhausted, even though we're technically just sitting down most of the day. So this research, I think from Stanford, Jay Bailenson was saying, there's lots of proposed reasons for this sort of Zoom fatigue we hear about in the media. Reasons for that might be we're not used to having so many eyes on us all the time, because when we're online, we feel like we have to keep looking at the camera, and it's actually not very natural. You got reduced mobility because you're actually trying to sit yourselves in this little square, and we sit in these really awkward positions without thinking about it. We're sick of seeing our own reflection and kind of analysing ourselves all day. It can be much harder to read the room and to see natural pauses. We're also being bombarded with notifications and answering emails while we're in MDT meetings, and all this task switching actually leads to what's being called an increased cognitive load. So it's harder for us, and it's making us feel exhausted by the end of the day. I love this picture because I think it's absolutely bonkers, but it's a real, I guess, scientific image of some of our reward pathways. And I'm putting this up here to just think about how using technology can stimulate our dopamine pathways and might lead us to certain activities, whether that's tweeting or whether that's constantly checking emails, because we can get dopamine rewards from these activities. And it's leading to phenomenon such as the media like to talk about us being addicted to our smartphones, and in turn, the effect that's having on things like our sleep and in turn, things like our mental health. And all of this, I know it sounds a bit doom and gloom, a bit like we were just saying in the previous talk, but can lead to this idea of digital burnout. So I just want to spend the last kind of couple of minutes of the talk thinking about what this might mean. We've talked about burnout more classically when we think about work as an occupational health disorder. But there are researchers thinking about it in terms of being kind of constantly connected to too many forms of technology at the same time. There might be different triggers and signs for this. So certain triggers might be this inability to unplug from working life, like we're talking about, permanent interruption of work by emails, mobiles, colleagues. Like right now, my research assistants write to me on Teams, Instant Messenger, but they also WhatsApp me at the same time and send me an email all about the same thing. We have this 24/7 working life, which kind of feels like we almost have shorter deadlines. I don't know why everyone thinks you must reply to an email within like 50 seconds and it's just not sustainable. We have this pressure to acquire new gadgets, and the gadgets that we do have when they're not working is incredibly frustrating. I'm sure you have more sophisticated platforms in GP land, but our psychiatry, I have something called EPJS, which is incredibly frustrating to add notes to and adds exponentially to my workload every day. We also have, like we're saying, this constant stream of communication. So even though people put foot to saying, this is my working hours, not your working hours, if you have your notifications on, you'll see emails when you're meant to be feeding your children or taking a bath or something, and it can still lead to you feeling overwhelmed and stressed. And then some of the signs, I guess, of this digital burnout or burnout more commonly are things like fatigue or your sleep being affected. Obviously, your concentration being affected might lead to things like lack of energy or effectiveness. You might feel more cynicism at work, detachment from what you're doing, frustration, irritability. Some people might turn to things like drinking in the evenings in order to switch off, or might lead to things like lower work standards or even changes in your behavior or inappropriate behavior at work. So what is the answer? So could you just turn off your computer, turn off your phone, just turn off the TV and not engage? Maybe sometimes on the weekend you could do that. But obviously with the internet, abstinence is not an answer. We have to use it. This is how we're doing things. And as much as I was talking about doom and gloom, let's not forget it's helped us reach patients in a time where they've needed us more than ever. I've been able to speak to patients with severe mental health problems in a treatment resistant depression service, the most suicidal patients, speaking to them daily on Zoom, where I might not have been able to reach them if we didn't have this technology. So I'll just give a couple of ideas from my point of view, because Leila, you mentioned in the beginning, we want to talk about how this is affecting our identity, but also how we might be able to think about helping our mental health and combating some of these difficulties. So I kind of like to think of it as like a more conscious use of our technology. And I guess the first step of being conscious is understanding your use of technology. So I guess the first thing I often think about is thinking about taking a digital inventory. So for example, all of your mobile phones will have these digital wellness apps, which are designed in a much less sexy way than the apps that we get addicted to. But it will tell you how much time you're spending on your emails or Twitter or whatever it might be. And just think about, is that aligning with your values? If you find out you're on Twitter for 2 hours every single day, is that actually how you want to be allocating your, you know, portions of your life? So yeah, maybe just taking a step back and thinking about how many Zoom calls you're having, maybe even as a team doing that a bit wider, like does everything have to be a Zoom call? Can sometimes you just phone somebody? Or if we're back in the office, can there be some more face-to-face at the moment? A very important thing, I think, for avoiding burnout is protecting your attention. So the internet or technology is full of false urgencies. So that's things like on WhatsApp where you have two blue ticks, like here, the red receipts, if someone can see. They have it on Teams as well. I can see when someone's read my message, which leads to frustration as to why have they read it and not replied. Or conversely, how I feel stressed is if they know I've read their message, but I haven't replied. But I might have just done that in between patients. So it's kind of a false urgency, as it were. I'm sure you're more than aware notifications are purposefully designed to be read to stimulate danger, so that we are more alert to them and we get stressed by having them on our screens and we want to open them. So your attention can't be at the mercy of the next notification you get. So just think about, all your computers will have a do not disturb mode. And I try to do that if we're trying to do some deep work, if I'm working on a protocol, turn off the notifications so that I can actually concentrate and not feel like I have to reply to an email straight away. And usually if it is something urgent, I would hope that someone would phone me if it was about an urgent matter to do with the patient. Usually you can wait 10 minutes or what have you to reply. Also think about task switching. So if you're in the middle of a piece of work and then you go and respond to an email and then come back to it, research has shown that you're actually less effective at the piece of work that you're doing. Again, thinking about the technology that we're using, the next thing I was thinking about was using the platforms to enhance and not hinder. So actually, I think the online diary is really helpful. I never used that until the pandemic, but now everything is scheduled in and I know what I'm doing. It's quite good. But I like to think about maybe matching your energy levels. So it's not always possible if somebody else books your appointments. But for example, if I need to work on a protocol, I might do that in the morning where my personal concentration is best. And then I try to schedule my Zoom calls in the afternoons because I'll always get energy from other people, from talking to my team, or I'll always have energy to talk to a patient. So if you can schedule your diary with the technology that we have, that can be helpful. Of course, think about tech-free activities. So whether that's areas of your office or your home where you're not going to have any technology. Lots of people talk about not having your phone in the bedroom, for example, not using phone for work, sleep. Of course, think about things like exercise, getting out in nature. I don't need to tell you that there's lots of research to show how both of those can like help your mental health. But also, I know it sounds cheesy, but are there any offline hobbies you can cultivate? I'm not particularly a sporty person, but for many people, this might be things like a sport or an art class, or even if there is now some in real life book clubs or something just to get you off your screens. And the reason here I've written shower moment, you know, there's no wonder when you go in the shower, you have that kind of shower moment where you think of an idea or you remember a friend's birthday. Because sometimes I think when I'm in the shower is the only time I'm not connected to a podcast or an email or scrolling on Instagram. So I think we need to create more of those shower moments in everyday life. I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but just think about your company culture. So your practice, if you're in a place of, if you're, you know, managerial position, can you agree as a team on how you're going to use these technologies and what the expectations are from your teammates? And then here at the bottom, I've just put, think about the relationship with your basic needs. So again, just thinking about how technology, when you're doing that inventory, might be affecting things like your sleep, or if you're scrolling on your phone while you're eating, are you eating more? Are you not taking care of your diet because you're not concentrating? So think about the sort of basic, or in other words, fundamental needs. And if you have time, this is like a very common used tool in like coaching worlds to think, you know, to kind of think about different areas of your life and mark them from 0 to 10. So kind of using the analogy of an MOT, you wouldn't drive your car if it wasn't safe to do so, but we're often running on empty a lot of the time. So if you could think about certain areas of your life where you could make even a small improvement, even just monthly, choosing one area. So for example, this month I'm going to make more effort to turn off certain notifications and see if that benefits me like over the next month. You could try sitting down and drawing a tool like this out, and I'm happy to share this slide or the slides later. And of course, obviously your GP, so thank you for all the help that you do give everybody. So just as well, we're often, as doctors, think that we're you know, we can't seek help for things like our mental health, especially as like a psychiatrist, it feels difficult. But we have obviously your wonderful selves, but there is, if anyone that hasn't already accessed it, practitioner health program is incredible, where doctors can access mental health support, CBT, one-to-one kind of therapy and sessions with psychiatrists and GPs. And then you can also self-refer to IAPT, refer to a psychiatrist, or if you are actually having, I am treating doctors and nurses at the moment who have become addicted to things like games on their mobile phones over the pandemic while we've had, you know, while we've been isolated. So there is the National Centre for Game Disorder where I work. And of course, if you are in crisis, there's new texting services and there's the Samaritans. Please feel free to reach out.
Lovely. Thank you very, very much. You've given us lots to think about.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. Tweet at us at @KumekForKCL. Thank you for listening. See you next time.